Well, good evening, and thank you for coming to the November 13th council briefing. We've got a bunch of items to go through tonight, and we do have a hard stop just before 7 o'clock with a Board of Adjustment meeting going on next door. So the first item I'd like to start with tonight is the special
Planning
event.
Commission.
Planning Commission, thank you. Is the special event policy. Molly had sent out a document to all of you, which is considered to be an internal final draft. But she was looking for some input from you as to whether or not you're ready to see it for formal consideration. Molly, is there anything you want to add?
I came to you just a few months ago with our initial rough draft of the new policy. I would like to reiterate that I was able to cut down on the 2017 current policy by separating policies and procedures. Since our last meeting, I did make a few amendments based on our conversation and some other internal communications that we had, which include requesting an exception to the single day festival for Florida Fin Fest to allow it to be 2 days. We would like to bring forth a calendar of city produced events annually for your approval. We lengthen the requirement for the first right of refusal or the grandfather clause from 2 years to 5 years and included a requirement for a certified crowd manager for additional internal security, especially for our larger events. So I'm just looking from you to see if you agree and approve and would like for us to bring this policy forward for formal adoption.
Have we talked about the certified crowd manager in the past?
No, that's something that maybe our fire marshal would be able to speak to. That is a requirement now. That's something that St. Augustine does for all of their festivals.
A requirement by?
It's in the fire prevention code, so it doesn't have to be in here. I need to enforce it anyway. It's just something I was missing. Anytime there's a crowd over 500 people, you're required to have at least one, and it can be up to increase each time from that amount. So whether it's in here, whether it just enforces state regulations when we do our permitting, it's something I've started asking for them already because it's already in the state.
Do we want to qualify it with having events that are over 500 people? I mean, not that we count them, but
it does.
That's
that
I have it written.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It says it in there.
I didn't catch.
This is the first I'm hearing of that, so I'm just
right.
Kind of like any new things that we put on people.
Because
500 seems low to me.
Actually, it could be 250 for the clubs and things. I mean, I've just started on the new clubs going in and getting them to come back and meet that code.
Is it an easy certification
yes.
to get?
Yes, okay. It's easy.
And it can be someone within the producer's organization?
Yeah, for them, anybody, he picks out who they want to do it. And for the clubs and businesses, it's good if their door people or their management have it. Basically, it's keeping the overcrowding, make sure all the exits are clear, back on them, and shows them what happens if they're not, as far as the possible loss of life and things.
Okay, so for the fire code, you're
yes.
saying clubs and restaurants.
And any assembly area.
Any assembly, even if it's a completely outdoor, open
yes.
space.
Yeah. Well, they're fenced in, because there's fences around the sites and things, so you still have to.
They're
have
not impenetrable fences.
Not now, maybe later.
Well,
of them are. There's bicycle racks, when they're locked mm-hmm. together, they're not knocking over. The little plastic ones we have, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or the big barricades we slide. But still, it's easy for them to do. It's $20
okay.
online. It's nobody's complained about having to do it. So.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments from council on this one?
I do.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I mean,
I'm going to go off topic, so.
Oh, okay.
I'll go last.
Maybe I'm not remembering, but can somebody remind me why we are lengthening the requirement for the first right of refusal grandfather clause from 2 years to 5?
Do you want me to? If you want to speak to that. Sure. So we have several events as of late who have been on their second year, and their first year maybe went okay. The second year was one of the worst events we had, but technically they'd be grandfathered in. So I think maybe more experience under their belt would be plausible for them to be considered an annual event, reoccurring.
Okay. That's a good answer.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Is she the new Molly of Parks and Rec?
She's the new Kathy.
Kathy.
I just bridged the gap.
Okay. And that's Alice Riley.
Yeah,
she's
that's
not
Alice
that new.
No, our special events coordinator. She's doing an awesome job.
It's definitely a lot better than the previous policy.
So my slightly off-topic question then, if you were done with your questions, is as we are trying to activate Latham Plaza more with off-night, off, you know, peak events, the co-branded, not the co-branded, what is it called? The city-sponsored? What is the one
the
where we can...
The co-sponsored.
Co-sponsored. We require it to be a nonprofit. Has that presented a challenge? I know we had that car club that was not an established nonprofit that we couldn't work with. Is that an issue, getting those types of events to come in?
That's been the only one that's come up where they intended to come in as a co-sponsorship and we ran into an issue.
Okay. And the issue was?
That they weren't a nonprofit.
Okay. So can we keep an eye on that? Mm-hmm. Because I can't think of another good example, because you'd still have to be some sort of entity to be able to get the insurance and whatnot. But I want to take down the barriers if there's a quality organization that can put that kind of event together that would activate the park on a Tuesday night. You know, I want to try to lower the barriers for them to be able to do that. So.
Well, and we did speak about a variable rate structure for events, and I believe Parks is looking at weekday events, mm-hmm. not charging as much, and looking at the impact and taking all those things into consideration.
Okay.
So it may be possible that it can be addressed that way as
okay,
well.
Okay, that's a good point. Thank you. And congratulations on 36 pages to 9 pages. All the same font, all the margins are the same. It's amazing.
I think it took me longer to format than it did to write it.
I kept calling it. It was the Frankenstein policy, so you did a really nice job pulling it together.
So council is okay if we bring this forward at an upcoming meeting for your formal consideration?
Yes.
Yep.
Awesome. That's item one.
Thank you.
I'm going to do a quick jump down to item G, city board candidate discussion, because this one is a little bit more time sensitive with board appointments expiring in December. So I'll ask Sherry to come up and talk a little bit about what we've done in the past and what you have in front of you tonight. Sherry, it's yours.
Well, in the past, as we've done this time, we have board interviews that are held with all the people who have submitted applications, and so now the terms are about to expire at the end of December, so previously there's been discussion at a council briefing, so really it's just kind of a discussion of your all, and then it'll be on the December 4th agenda for actual appointments to be made.
So we have two current members of both the Planning Commission and the Board of Adjustment that are up for reappointment, and they're all four interested in reappointment.
Right.
We can't really take a vote, but does anyone feel uncomfortable with continuing those four?
No.
And then the Community Redevelopment Agency is going to be a little trickier because we're losing the chairman, so we need to appoint a chairman.
The chair will be at the same meeting.
Okay, so this is the only board that we appoint the chair.
And are we supposed to do the vice chair too? Do we appoint the vice chair too?
Yeah. So
yes. Okay.
Are we able to have alternates now?
So we did get it approved, or they're considering it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Not tonight.
No.
Not
it'll come. It'll come before. It already went before this year. It'll come to you guys at the next meeting.
Is it at the same meeting?
Next city council meeting.
It's going to be an ordinance.
Yeah.
Okay.
So two readings. So it's going to be at the next
November
24th.
December 4th meeting.
Is that going to be the first reading of ordinance or second reading of ordinance? So the second meeting in December will be the adoption of the ordinance.
Correct. So then I have to wait for the CRA to
Yeah, we do.
Maybe a question for our attorney is, can they make appointments to positions pending approval?
You knew that answer. It was a nice try, though.
Had to ask.
Then I have a question for you.
So we're going to have one vacancy on the CRA?
Potentially.
Didn't you say?
With Art leaving.
Right.
And then potentially the two alternates, and if we, assuming we renew, the two current members.
Do you want all the appointments to be at the same council meeting, or should I go ahead and put through the planning and board of adjustment ones?
That's a good idea. Let's do that.
Together, or?
Let's do the planning and board of adjustment on the next meeting, and then we'll hold off on the CRA. Does that mess anything up, Heather? Okay. Because I would rather just do all the
CRA,
all of it together. Yeah,
that's fine with me.
And that'll give everyone a chance, if you haven't already, to make sure to listen to the interviews and review the applications. And we've got a good opportunity here.
Question for attorney input based on sequence of events at the meeting. We're talking about the second hearing of the ordinance in December at the second meeting. The appointments would need to occur after the second reading of the ordinance, correct? So we would need to do the ordinance before the appointments.
That's for the alternate.
Correct, for the alternates.
Yes, yes. You have to create the alternate position before you can fill it.
No, that makes complete sense. It's just annoying.
Yeah. So we'll need to move the ordinances up on the agenda.
Can we do that?
Or you can take what would normally be an administrative action and defer it to the end of the meeting, which
What's
would be
administrative?
The appointments for the. That might be easier, is to just take the appointments and move them to the.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that.
Why isn't the first reading on Monday?
We originally thought we could do it by resolution, so it'd be a one and done. But in talking with the city attorney, we realized we had to do it as an ordinance, which. Just took a little more time and set the two readings, so it kind of set us back by 2 weeks.
Okay. So let's knock out planning and board of adjustment, and then we'll do CRA at the last meeting of the year. And then what about the pension? You're at my blind spot, Jody. The pension reappointment we have to.
It's a fifth member. It's going to be on the tomorrow.
So the pension board approves it, and then we approve it as a ministerial act?
I thought that's usually we do. I thought we did it as a ministerial. I thought.
Let's look. Let me look for Dustin's email. We've still got to get that pension board figured out in terms of
I don't think we ever came to a conclusion.
Yeah, and we have people that are qualified to be on the pension board and interested. So a fifth member selected by the other four members and appointed as a ministerial act by the city council. The fifth member may be a retiree of the system. So this is our fifth member of the general employee board.
Was there any discussion on any of the 17 applicants?
Okay. Was everybody able to access all the materials if you weren't at the
I'm
meetings?
Good.
Okay. Yeah.
Any other guidance you needed?
Got it.
Okay. We're good on item G. With that, we'll move on to item C, parks rate resolutions. We'll ask Trevor to come on up.
Good evening.
Hello.
Well, we are here tonight to discuss the evaluating the rate resolutions for all the different parks, or all the different areas where we have a fee structure within parks. Originally, we wanted to look at consolidating everything to one structure. We've been working with finance and admin, and we're going to hold off on some of that until we come up with the best solution as far as consolidating them. Ultimately, what we wanted to do is make sure we had, you know, right now we have a 2008 for tennis and 13 for here and 2017 for here and 22 for here. So once we come up with the best solution to make it consistent, we'll come back to you at that point. But ultimately tonight we wanted to take a look at each of our fee structures and go in, and most of them have some small updates. We came across, we polled as many municipalities as we can. We looked at as many parks as we can. We felt like we came up with some rates that are fair, reasonable for the community, and still helped us to maintain the assets and provide a great asset, a great bargain, you know, for our residents. We can go park by park and we can highlight those, or if you guys just would like questions, however you'd like us to move forward.
I have a question. On the, I just had it up. It was 150 and then it went up to 1,000.
So that was one of those, it was kind of the former recreation superintendent had that, and that was a price that was in there. And to be honest with you, we kind of scratched our head over it. It was $50 for one day or $150 for an entire month, and didn't quite make sense to us. What was happening is one organization was kind of monopolizing some of the parks for 3 months during the summer. And so we went ahead and made that where it kind of made sense, where we had a daily rate. Or if you wanted to get it for the month, it still was a rate that we thought that was a fair price, and it didn't allow an individual group to come out and monopolize the.
Was that group taking all the days and spaces?
They were. There was a group using all the baseball fields for summer camps and things like that.
We don't have a restriction of how many days or time.
And that's one of those policies that we're going to look at next. So one of the things in the resolution says that we'll have the ability to create the policies, and that's something that we will bring to you as soon as we further hone in on some of these details. You know, because there is a lot. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure for green space, and trying to, you know, first and foremost, we want it has to be a rec league first. You know, what we're not wanting to do is have a bunch of these travel ball teams come in here and try to monopolize our space and make money off the parks. And so ultimately, we're here for recreation first, and that's another policy that we'll be working on.
So I remember getting a phone call a couple of years ago, and they were trying to find a space to practice for their league, but they couldn't because they were all taken by the same group. So
right now we have a tremendous amount. I mean, if you think about Wingate Park, we have the football field, and we do have Papa Warner has two seasons there. And actually, Papa Warner, just to give you guys an update, our Jacks Beach 12U team just won their division, so they are down to the top 32 in the nation.
Oh, wow.
So they play this week for the whole Southeast region, so that's kind of cool. You know, and then we also have about 400 adults play in our flag football league out there, which starts now. Unfortunately, football is very hard on grass, especially when you play in the fall and the spring. And so the summertime, that field is kind of closed to recover. And then we do have baseball. There's over 500 kids play baseball spring and fall seasons on the smaller baseball fields. And then if you go, we have adult softball. And then on the adult softball, we share that with the boys. Baseball comes over, the girls softball. We have three separate recreational lacrosse teams practice out there. We have summertime kickball leagues. So we do have a large assortment of people using the fields. It's really not monopolized to necessarily one group. The only ones that were doing that were some weekly time summer camps. And so we're going to work to make sure there's fair competition for everyone there.
Now, how often is the Carver Center rented out, the green space?
Carver Center is, we do have teams come to us to rent it out. It's not rented out as much, but that's one of those parks that it's first come, first serve, or it's you can rent it for the fee. Where Wingate Park is rental only. I mean, occasionally if the gates don't get locked, you'll see some people having some pickup games occasionally, but for the most part, there's really no way to secure Carver. It's first come, first serve, and then. But if you want a permit, if you want to reserve it, that's one of the other parks that we will reserve. Okay. And we are working with the one sport we don't have out here at our parks is soccer. So we've been working with a little soccer club that wants to start up with just some free clinics and kind of start up something small, and we're working with them to potentially use the Carver Fields.
Now, I do see a lot of soccer at the Fletcher Fields, the San Pablo Fields, a lot of young kids doing. So at least we do have some soccer at the beach, maybe just not on our parks.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay.
And is this, that number, is that commensurate with what other cities charge? I mean, I totally can see that if it's $150 for the month, anybody should be like, sure, but is 1,000 standard-ish? Is that kind of?
Yeah, when we did kind of our due diligence, and then you're talking about, that's a summer camp, so you're talking about these groups will come in and, you know, you figure you look out there during the summertime and they charge $250 a kid, and there's
kids
out there.
For a week.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure if that was low or high or where that's about the average.
Yeah, no, they'll be glad to pay it.
Okay.
That $1,000 again, was that for the month or for the week?
That's for a month.
For the month? Okay.
Per field.
Per field.
Per month. And we consider a month to be 4 weeks, so 20 days is how we'll define it in our policy.
150 was way too low. That surprised me.
What is that?
So 150 was way too low. That surprised me.
So we had a first responder rate, and now we're adding active duty and retired military to that?
So the rate that we had in the past was just a senior rate.
Okay.
And we received lots of complaints about no military rates.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe we had an email, Bruce had an email several years ago, where we kind of extended the senior rate to military. And so as we were calling around doing our rates, we saw that a lot of the courses were just calling it a first responder, meaning retired or active military, police, fire, or the seniors is what we saw a lot of the other clubs doing.
So I'm glad it's defined in here, because I really wouldn't consider military, especially retired, first. If I just saw first responder, I would think of police, fire, that sort of thing. When you guys are booking, are you going to have any way of delineating that? That's a lot of people, and that's a lot of your current golfers, retired military, in this community. So I'm wondering if that's going to be, and it's a pretty significant discount.
So they typically, they'll typically call, and when they come in to check in, they say you have a military rate, and then they'll show their military ID, and then typically they do charge them the senior rate.
Okay. So it's going to look like seniors.
It'll look like seniors, but we can change the code within our point of sale to say first responder rate, not say senior. We can define it.
I mean, I would differentiate that, okay, because I think that that's going to be.
Make two SKUs.
Well, it has looked like senior, but it could look, maybe look different.
We can make multiple SKUs.
Yeah.
We can track how many. We can have a SKU that's the same rate that says military, that says. We can track.
I think that would be good data to have to see how that's actually being utilized, because I think you're going to get a lot of, I don't know if a retired military person, I mean, some of them may be senior rate anyway, so I don't think that's going to necessarily do it. But.
And it sounds like a lot of that's happening today, but to your point, was that going to be a massive budget drag? If not, but it sounds like they're extending it today anyway, so no, not really.
Right. Yeah, so like I said, that's something that Bruce had emailed couple years ago, so they've been, for the last 2 or 3 years, they've been extending, hasn't necessarily been advertised, but if someone came and said, you have a military rate, we've offered the senior rate to the military.
And first responder?
The first responder is new. We just discovered that while we were doing our price evaluations.
Okay.
And so we thought, that was a good idea. We could extend that as well, or at least present it to you and see if you felt it was a good idea as well.
I don't have any objection to doing that. I just think that that's going to be a lot of golfers that I think.
But it doesn't extend into, it's not included in the weekends.
No.
So,
it's only Monday through Thursday. We don't offer Friday or the weekends. We don't offer walking rates or senior rates.
Although I think Greg probably would want the senior rate on the weekends, but I understand. I get it.
No weekends.
Yeah.
So much love.
Looks good to me.
Any other questions or comments from council? Got the direction you're looking for?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. We'll move on to item D, private commercial event policy. Heather or floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay, so this might be something that you haven't heard of yet. Since 2006, we've been operating on a basically internal memo that we've been using in the form of a policy that was drafted by the previous planning director. I think I may have the only copy of it in a folder on my desk, but
it's on a typewriter.
It was done on a Brother, not electric. So essentially what we've been doing since 2006, and my understanding of what started it was we had the Super Bowl here in 2005. I think all of us were here then. You may remember it was kind of the Wild West all over Jacksonville with establishments just bleeding out into their parking lots and wherever they could to expand their operations and try to generate some additional business from the extra traffic that happened before, during, and after the Super Bowl. So to try to rein that in, an internal memo was drafted to basically say what we were going to allow. It's never been looked at or touched or changed or formalized since then. So that's kind of what we were looking to do. And when talking with Molly about the special events policy for events on city property, we at first thought we'd roll it into that, and we decided to keep it separate since it is run out of a different department with coordination from police and fire as well. So I just kind of wanted to go through what we've been doing to date, get your thoughts on whether or not you think that that's adequate to change it, make some changes, and kind of tell you some of the one kind of recommended change that we want to look forward to. But again, it's pretty straightforward. What we've been allowing, and again, this is really for restaurant and bar establishments and then retail establishments. So you'll see, I think this past weekend, Sports Mania had their sales tent out. They do that for like Florida Georgia weekend. If there's like a Jags playoff game, they'll put it out there. So they go through our process. Right now, what we've been allowing is up to 6 times per year per establishment for no more than 3 days. And that seems to be working out pretty well. We keep track of those internally. We don't allow them to do anything that they wouldn't otherwise be allowed to do in that zoning district. So keeping it in compliance with allowable uses. We have a tent, an application that they would have to submit if they're installing a big tent, similar to what Sports Mania has done this past weekend. Food trucks go through the regular food truck process. Outdoor sound would go through that regular process, low volume sound permits. Alcohol, same thing. We have an internal extension of premises permit, and the state has an application as well, so we kind of do double on that. And then as far as capacity, that's set by the fire marshal. And that one kind of goes back to the importance of getting a site plan for these larger events. If they're fenced in, if there's stages or tents or vendors, you know, we're looking at what the size of the event is and how many people it can hold. You know, going back to Steve's comment about that crowd control manager, you know, we need to know that so we can say whether or not they would need it at any kind of event. Right now, one of the issues that we're having that we discussed internally is that, and I will not name any names, some establishments will run in here on Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock and say, I need this for this weekend. And we're like, yeah, no, we can't look at it that fast because some of these have to go to the fire marshal for review. What if he's out of town? Some of them go to the police department. If it's alcohol, it definitely is going to the police department. It takes everybody a couple days to look at it and get it through the process. So we're proposing a application period of at least 15 days before the event to give us town time to route it, review it, provide any comments if they have to change something, et cetera. We think that's reasonable. And so what we've done in this policy, again, it's simple. It's only one page outlining, you know, kind of the what and the how. So looking for your feedback on kind of the way we're doing it now, if you have ideas for something you want to see that's different, and then your thoughts on kind of that 15-day prior to an event deadline. And we know who's doing these events, so ideally we would reach out to them well in advance. Let's say we don't implement this until January 1st. Reach out to them well in advance and say, hey, for 2024, this is the new policy and this is the new standard for timing as far as like getting your application to us for review.
How does this differ from the memo that you have?
It doesn't, with the exception of the 15 days. The memo only said 6 events a year for up to 3 days at a time. It didn't have any of this other stuff. So this is just kind of how we do it internally for all these different kind of types of things that would go along or may go along with this type of event.
So we're formalizing said memo.
Correct, formalizing the memo.
What about for businesses who regularly do the same thing every year. Is there any way to, like, you know, Sunrise is going to have a 4th of July sale. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a Christmas sale. Mm-hmm. They're going to have whatever. If it's a business, you know, Lynch's is going to have something for St. Patty's Day. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a, you know, Mexican restaurant's going to have something for. Is there a way to put this out early in the year and say, hey, look, this is the ones we're going to do every single year. We do them like this every year. Is there a way to kind of make it easier on the businesses to do that?
There could be if we know it's going to be the same as last year.
Yeah, you know? Something
and
like that.
I know,
that.
Like you said, Sunrise, they always do a Black Friday sale. Yeah. And it's, you know, one or two tents out in the parking lot. That one we're like, yep, looks like last year. We didn't have any issues. You know, I mean, obviously with the 15 business days, I think we could be a little flexible. I'll give you an example. There's a chiropractor on the south end that puts out a tent every couple of months and does like free adjustments for first responders. But there's no food being cooked. There's no alcohol. Those are like, okay, no big deal. You're taking up one parking space. So those are usually, there's easy ones, but it's the large ones we have concerns with where there's alcohol and there's capacity, you know, constraints. They have to have certain number of exits, certain number of police officers, and those are the ones that we want to scrutinize more to make sure that we're doing everything, you know, by the book. That safety is the utmost consideration.
So I was saying, if there's one of those companies that does that regularly, that could you put in at the beginning of the year and say, hey, look, we're going to have, these are the dates, this is what we've done for the last 10 years. Again, I think about something like a Sunrise, because I'm always up there.
Yeah.
hey, look, on January, we're going to have these five events this year. Could a business do that?
We could consider, looking at, like, give us your schedule at the beginning of the year of the events you think you're going to have. Because we have had times where somebody planned an event and then it was a washout over the weekend. They ended up not having the event, but they still want to have that number, the same number. So, you know, we don't really have a way to say, well, you were approved, but you didn't have it. We don't know you didn't have it kind of thing. But, like, getting a list ahead of time, mm-hmm. I think that's kind of where you're going with that. It's something we could. Yeah, we could request, so I think it would help us.
Just for some businesses. Yeah. And it gives you guys a little bit more planning time than even the 15 days, because if 10 people come in with their 15-day request.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, we don't get a ton of these. We really don't. It's okay. Maybe one, maybe two a month.
Okay.
It's not a tremendous amount.
Is there an application fee?
It's just with the, right now we're charging them for the tent applications. It's $40 per tent. It's a nominal fee. And then the extension of premises is $250. So that would be for any alcohol establishments.
What's that event, that parking event outside Sonapa, Roy's?
It's a fundraiser. They do once a year.
Is it the restaurant that puts it, or is it the shop?
It's the restaurant kind of hosts it for the nonprofit that's... Okay. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it's for, but they do that once a year. And that's a good example of their site plan does change a little bit every year as they, like, improve that event. So we want to see that information.
Has there been a business that wanted to do something, not for charity, but let's say, but it's a retail business and they wanted to make it a big deal, bring in live music, alcohol? Has anyone ever? The only reason I ask is just public safety, that's all.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any that may have involved alcohol that weren't at a restaurant. I know that the Beaches Museum does a couple, and then the St. Paul's has their carnival, and they do have a beer garden for that. So our code allows what's called an ODP permit, a temporary permit for a place that otherwise would not have alcohol, as long as it's a nonprofit organization. So our code allows up to 3 times per year.
But we go through the special event.
Right,
process.
It's on city property. So this is really more for private property, commercial events on commercial property, where they're just really extending their operations out beyond their building footprint.
I don't have a problem with the 15 days. Is this something that could be done in 10 business days, in 2 weeks' time?
I mean, we've done it the day they bring it in before, because they're like, this weekend, but we don't want to do that, because then, you know, I don't want to have to run and find Steve or run and find police.
Right.
We
really no, that's interruptive.
More
but...
time, yeah. Yeah, we don't want to miss something because we've rushed it, because you waited too long, so.
Well, I would hope that they would...
for the 10 days if he thinks that's... We got to keep...
I mean, we know when the 4th of July sale is going to be.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, I would hope that people would be planning something at least 15 days prior.
Obviously not. Obviously not.
I think, Steve, 10 days, do you feel like that would be adequate? I know it takes longer for fire and police, because they don't get it when we get it. We have to do the things to route it, so they might get it a day or two after we do. So I want to make sure he's
comfortable. Most everybody does, like you mentioning, Bill, that we just did some that were 30, 60 days out. The Christmas tree tents came in for Home Depot in June.
Yeah.
So it's doing it. But then we've got one of the names you may have mentioned who Thursday turns in for a Friday, Saturday event. And then we just can't.
Can't do it that fast.
We can't turn those around. That's what we're trying to get corrected. But yeah, 10 days is probably doable in there. 10 working days. We need to, you know, that would
10
be
business
2 weeks.
Days. So 2
yeah.
weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be comfortable
so
with
10
that
business
if
days.
Steve is, yeah. And I'll run that by PD as well.
As long as Steve's not on a 2-week vacation.
Correct.
True. That was the intent.
Or his designee. 10
right.
days or his
right.
designee.
Right. Somebody would look at it.
Right.
Okay.
10 business days.
Yeah. I'm good with that. Thank you for that feedback. Any other questions or concerns you guys have with this or adjustments you might want to see moving forward?
I like the cover page.
I don't know who made that, but it's beautiful. It's
looking sharp.
Well, that's the cover page for our special event.
I know.
Yeah,
I
just typed
the consistency.
It up. Someone made it pretty for
fun.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Okay. Yes, I do. Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll move on to item E, everybody's favorite. Mm-hmm. Prepare violations.
How long have you been holding that one in?
That mode kicked in. Actually, had a really cool picture.
So, good evening, everyone. The peer policy or ordinance is back before you, really on your request. If you recall our discussion back in June, when you adopted the prohibitions to jumping off the pier, we briefly discussed the penalties that were in place for the section in which we put that amendment. And the consensus at the time was that $50 as a maximum fine was not sufficient for violations of the pier policy. And so I was asked to bring back options for you to consider for more severe penalties, and I've tried to do that tonight. In your memo that was sent out to you before this meeting, I've included a couple things. First of all, some penalties that are in place for various locations around the states that have municipal piers. And also, following that information, I have some options that I'm proposing as ones that you can consider. You can disregard all of those or take one or two of them and juxtapose some of the positions or the terms to get exactly what you like. So the end game is you don't have to accept exactly what I proposed. But if you look to page 8, where it says at the top, exhibit 1, that's my first option. So option 1 is to keep the prohibition in the section of the code that deals with beach prohibitions in general and simply amend the section of the code that is intended to impose the penalties for those violations. And in exhibit 1, there are two options provided. At subparagraph C, what we have is a revision that allows us to have a fine only as the penalty, but the fine has increased from $50 to $500 maximum. In version 2, which is the second option for option 1, you would incorporate the penalties for a second degree misdemeanor, which introduces the possibility of jail time for a violation of a beach prohibition. Now, we're going to deal with the jail time again in option 2, but these seem to be the types of penalties that are available and given out throughout the state, one or the other. Second degree misdemeanor to me seems maybe a little bit excessive for a beach violation, but again, that gives you that range to deal with. and then it leaves it up to the special magistrate, really, to determine from the factual circumstances which penalty would be most appropriate based on what actually occurred. But that's option one. If you move on to page 10, which at the top of the upper right-hand corner says Exhibit 2, that's my option two. And so option two allows for a couple things. We remove, unlike with option one, we actually take the prohibition and put it in a standalone ordinance. And as a part of that ordinance, we would include penalties. Now, what I didn't flesh out in writing on this is the option to include additional activities that you want to expressly prohibit from the pier, which has occurred in other places such as Cocoa Beach, things like that. But, you know, many of the violations that could occur on regular beach activity could easily be imported and included for the pier, such as urinating from the pier or panhandling from the pier. There are a number of things that you can consider to add in a standalone ordinance. But if you don't want to spend more time dealing with the issue, we just take the prohibition as it exists, and then we deal with the penalties. So the penalty that I proposed is, again, incorporating the fines that may be imposed under option one. You can make it a second degree misdemeanor, obviously, but what you've got laid out in quite a bit of detail is the civil remedy also, which is this ability to ban someone from the pier if they've jumped off of the pier, either contrary to a directive or whatever the case may be. And the way it's written is you can utilize both of these in tandem to deal with the issue depending on the severity of the facts. When we initially broached the subject about trespassing folks from the pier, in the first instance, there was some concern about whether or not you prohibit someone from a public place. And I think we've addressed that by going through a lot of cases to see how the courts have dealt with these situations. And so as long as there's an effort to provide access to those members to exercise their First Amendment rights from that public place or to conduct business from that public place, you can exclude them. But you couldn't say jumping off the pier means you can't come to the beach. No, jumping off the pier means you cannot come back to the pier for X number of times, number of days. So if you could flip over to page 11, part of your consideration on the trespass option includes a consideration as to how long do you think you want to have as a maximum number of days that you would trespass someone from the pier if there is a violation. In cases that I've reviewed, courts have upheld a two-year ban, provided due process rights were extended to the person banned, meaning they've gotten a chance outside of a consideration of their other violation, to come in and say, I shouldn't have been trespassed from this particular public place. And we've taken some care to make sure that those kinds of provisions are there and that there's adequate opportunity for the person to line the record to have access, again, unfettered access. But in the event that it's unfettered or fettered, they can petition the city manager for permission to come in to make sure I can, again, exercise my First Amendment rights, conduct my business as I see fit. Another benefit from the trespass section of option two is this. In the context of another issue that had been presented to me earlier this year, what we found is that there really isn't any general trespass ordinance in our code. And so there wasn't a tool available to the police to deal with people outside of the mission house. So sort of them actually being in violation, there was nothing available to say, you can't do this, you can't stand here, you can't move on, whatever the case may be. We mentioned loitering with respect to certain properties, not all properties. And so this, as it's written, if you look at number, subparagraph C, it can easily be utilized by the police to deal with other public property. So that was the other thing that I was trying to resolve with this language. But again, this is option two. I think the due process rights are adequately addressed by this. And then option three, as I laid out in the memo, would be something of a combination of both one and two, which is we increase the penalties for beach violations in general, and you also have this penalties option for peer penalties.
So I don't think it rises to the level of incarceration myself. I know that's qualified by state statute and a misdemeanor, but I don't think it rises to that.
Yes.
I think a fine that's a strong fine, you know, 250 or more, kind of prohibits people from saying, hey, let's pull our money together and jump anyways, you know. And then loitering, that's governed by state statute. And there's a state statute on loitering, right?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I know there's trespass. So let's just say there's clear trespass violations.
Sure, sure. There's trespass and loitering.
Yeah. Loitering. But loitering is something a little different from trespassing.
Sure. No, I get it.
And the problem that we were addressing in the first instance was you had just people complaining that the folks were just hanging around. And there was no signage in place saying you can't do that. There was nothing setting up this authority to say move on. And in fact, all of those kinds of the inclination for what to do had been actually prohibited under some cases under, you know, federal law as being a violation of certain rights. So it was very important for there to be some kind of underpinning for sure. Us to work with. It wasn't there at that point, but even if you had something else, whether you had someone, let's say they were just spitting in public, and there are places where that's
So when it comes to all the other issues, whether it's, and you make some good points, the urinating off the pier, or if someone wants to go up there with their solo stove and light a fire on the pier,
right.
At what point do we look at this and say, hey, Jacksonville, this is your pier, this is your problem? You know, I mean, I don't want to, you know, or is this a joint problem? Should we talk to them as a team and say, hey, you know, listen, we're willing to uphold a certain portion of this, you know, or enforce a certain portion of this. However, it's still your peer, you know.
Right.
Are we allowed to tell them that we're going to enforce no fires on their peer?
Well, you bring up a good point in that, you know, let's say, for instance, a trespass were in effect on an individual who jumped off the pier that we imposed on the individual. Ultimately, the person who's going to call the police or stop them from getting on the pier is the operator of the pier. And the operator of the pier doesn't work for Jacks Beach. The operator of the pier works for the city of Jacksonville. So there does need to be some communication with and buy-in from the city of Jacksonville as to whatever we end up putting in place.
I mean, if I were to describe their reactions or response to date, it's like they basically abdicated responsibility of enforcement. In terms of prohibitions, they've abdicated that to us, because before we put the first substantive language before you, many efforts have been made to reach out to Jacksonville, and I think I documented their response, and then at the end of the day, it was like, you guys go ahead and do it. And they weren't even interested in getting a copy of what we actually adopted.
Well, there's also a new administration in there now, too, so.
Well, and I think there's probably a big discrepancy between the Parks and Rec folks downtown and the actual operator. The peer operator needs to know what we're putting
in place. But he's like a vendor.
Yeah, but he's the one who's going, he's got eyes on the pier all day long, so if there's going to be any violations, he's the one that's going to see them.
Right.
I'm not saying he's involved in crafting whatever we decide to do.
But I could also see somebody who's in favor of the government administration downtown, you know, saying, I'm jumping off it anyways because my brother is so-and-so, or, you know, on the other side of the river.
Sure.
And so, or,
well,
so,
I mean, the enforcement will obviously be probably uniform, but I mean, I was in contact with the Office of General Counsel I mean, we can let them know we want to go a little bit further. Again, when we introduced the topic before, they had no idea we were going to bury this in a section where only $50 was the maximum penalty. So as I look at it, the attorney, at least, I'm going to presume she had authority to speak for her client, wasn't concerned. And but whatever, if you want, we can just send all this to them in advance and say, look, we're taking it now a step further than we took it in June. What are your thoughts on it? And then let them respond to either Mike and Elise, and then how you want to move forward. You guys can choose that going forward.
I think we should do that. But
I think you guys were two of the people that were concerned about the fine not being high enough.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts on, before I make my suggestion, do you have thoughts on what?
I would say $500 is appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, $500, $250
crazy barely. About the incarceration possibility being there. I think that's a little overreach, although.
Well, but it's just a possibility, and it's only, I mean, what, special magistrate
and some of the language there that Sandy had presented seemed a little weak to me as, depending on severity, what is that?
Well,
I think that's.
I borrowed that language from Cocoa Beach and send theirs. And.
Is that for all the violations of that are in that section, or is it just for this?
At the end, I mean, you can take it out as terms of legislative language, because that's exactly what the special magistrate will do. He's not going to come in and say $500.
Well, the difference I think that you're making is it's a difference between criminal and civil. If it's criminal, then you can incarcerate. But if it's a civil violation with a fine, then you can't incarcerate. So,
well, we can just strike that. I mean, again,
I would prefer it be civil myself with a high fine. It would be a deterrent.
What about the frequent flyers? Someone that's.
Well, they're going to just get.
Then you trespass them. You trespass them for 120 days, that knocks out the summer season.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I'd say like a minimum at least, like 3 to 6 months to get them past whatever season we're in.
Yeah.
For the time. I was surprised looking at that, and thank you very much, Sandy, for all this information. I was surprised that, was it Flagler that had, like, the first one was a warning?
Yeah, sure.
I was like, all right, it's a free week. I'm surprised that, like, that's not somebody's senior, I'm not even going to say it on the record.
Flagler is a warning, yeah.
Yeah, you know. But
don't say it in front of the high school principal anyway.
Yeah.
So is the consensus a fine only, and then we send this to Jacksonville for one more look before you move forward? Or?
Well, what about the additional items such as the urinating or setting a fire or swimming near the pier or any of those?
I think those are already prohibited on the beach, correct? Yeah, but those are also, but that's a public space. So the pier is, I mean, that's like doing it on the street, correct? It's a public space.
You can light a barrel on that.
If you've got activities that are prohibited on the pier specifically, mm-hmm. and it doesn't include that, you have someone who says, well, we have taken the time to exclude it. You've got some room to move around by having that peer prohibition stuck in the middle of prohibited beach activities, because then you can make that argument. But if you set the peer prohibition in a set standalone ordinance, you've got two separate ordinances. What's prohibited? If one is very detailed and the other is not, the one that's not is not able to borrow from the detailed one to include additional activities that were not expressly set forth as being what you should not do. So if you want to make it more comprehensive, obviously the secondary or the settled side standalone ordinance would be the way to go. And then whatever you don't want to see happen on your pier, you don't necessarily have to incorporate all of the prohibitions from the beach to the pier, but you can be informed by what you see happening in public places and say, I really don't want that to happen on the pier. Nude sunbathing, whatever it is that you think people might want to do off that pier.
So many fish guts on that pier. So I think if we just deal with the pier standalone and not deal with the other beach issues, I think that's going to make our lives easier in the future, because this is a unique structure on our beach, because there are two other entities involved in it. So I would
make it a separate.
Make it separate and deal with the pier on its own. I don't think we need to send it back to Office of General Counsel at this point. I think we've talked about having a meeting with Daryl Joseph about special events on the pier. We need to have that meeting. We were going to let them get through 4th of July and air show, and they're through that now. So we need to get that on the schedule and maybe sit down and talk about this in theory and make sure that I think he'll go along with what we want to, but he needs to know that this discussion is being had. And at that same time, I mean, there might be special event related verbiage that we could put in here too, so that we can't really put them under our special event policies and operations, but there may be some things we want to put in there to protect ourselves from what they may approve, which is something we've almost run into.
Sure. If a policy is codified, then we bring it to them. I agree with that. But I also think that even if Daryl says, I think this is good, I still think at some point it needs to go to their general counsel and say.
Oh, no, absolutely. But I don't think we send it to the general counsel before Daryl has a chance to look
at right.
it.
No.
Send it to Daryl.
After it's drawn up and we have something codified.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
His parks department is deemed a client for OGC. Give it to Daryl. Daryl will say, this is where I like it to be, and then he'll pass it to OGC, and they'll do the legal review on it.
I'm not saying we show it to Daryl after it's codified. I'm saying we show it to Daryl before it's codified.
Correct.
In case there's more that we want to put into it based on that conversation.
And having a separate allows us to do that later down the road.
Exactly.
The unimaginable that we can't think of.
Right. It's there.
I mean, what do those Fletcher students think of next?
Well,
and then
the trespass. Bike off the scooter,
The trespass stuff. I mean, the fact that we don't have that in our ordinance. You know, I was thinking that we need to have that. So.
I mean, I sign a trespass affidavit for the museum every year.
Yeah, you can do that, but I'm just saying, if they were out patrolling.
Yeah.
And they saw someone just sort of doing something in a public space, but it wasn't breaking the law. There's nothing available to them to work with. And this is intended to give them something to work with.
Because, I mean, I could see that we could have a situation at one of our parks, and we might want to trespass somebody, you know? I mean, right now, I guess we don't have the ability to do that?
No, there are some provisions in the city code that specifically address certain parks. Where you can actually have a language in the code, but it's not for all public property. It's not for all public facilities. Mm-hmm. And again, in this instance, when the question was presented, it was for public space outside of a private property, and the officer was just trying to manage the complaints of all these people who were just hanging around, really waiting for the Mission House to open. And there was nothing to work with. I'm not saying if we had something in place, he could still have done anything, but that was the impetus for the review, and there was just nothing there. And literally, with a word search of the code, it was pretty barren.
I mean, could we even trespass somebody from City Hall?
In theory, I guess if they're in violation, according to this, if you're in violation of an ordinance, a regulation, state law, whatever, you can be trespassed for a certain period of time, but it would be where the violation occurs. So it has to be tied to your behavior, not simply I don't like you or whatever.
And it would only be this side and not the area over here where you have to be able to come in and be able to do public. You can't trespass and prevent somebody from coming in to say, get a building permit or pay their electric bill. So it
That's
would only
right,
be this portion.
On, but to your point, yes, and the exception or the exemption would be generated administratively by the city manager. So they'd have to say, I've been trespassed, but I still need to come over to planning and development to get a permit. I want to have permission for that limited purpose. And that's the language is, those kinds of requests should not be unduly refused. unreasonably refused. And that keeps us in line with the Constitution. So,
okay.
So if you guys don't have any other comments, I will leave this with Mr. Stephropoulos. Carry on.
So your thoughts at this point are the
separate.
Keep it separate, $500.
For the general beach activities.
Yep, and potential for trespass of the individual. Mm-hmm. And that's something
that's
we'll
get
Daryl Joseph, put that in front of him, see if he's amenable to all of that. If so, float it by.
And if we have to trespass somebody, yeah, I think like a minimum, like a, you know, at least, I mean,
3 to 6 months.
Yeah, a minimum of 3 months, probably 6 months.
Six months would probably be better. Yeah, 120.
Yeah. Okay.
Just get us past the season, right?
Exactly.
I think the shorter the period, the less likely you'd have any kind of violations.
That's a good point.
That's true, too. I don't think 2 years. So I think
yeah, 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. The last topic item that we have on for tonight is Fletcher land use request. Hopefully you've all had a chance to read it. I think a couple of you have actually had conversations with the school about this. A couple months ago, I was contacted by Principal Ledford regarding Fletcher High School's desire to potentially move their tennis courts to the south side of Seagate and to utilize land that the city currently owns but is not using it. There's an abandoned Beaches Energy substation at the southeast corner of Seagate and 10th. It's currently just a fenced-in area, and that's an area that would be added to additional land outside of those boundaries and turned into future tennis courts. So we really don't have a good policy per se with regards to land disposal or entering into these types of agreements. So I wanted to get some direction from council, specifically, you know, how you feel about entering into a long-term agreement for use of city property. In the conversation or the email exchange with Principal Ledford, DCPS is not interested in purchasing the property. They want to do a long-term use agreement for that property. They're not under a time constraint.
Because his letter said allowed to acquire the property, so
I followed up.
Okay.
And when I asked about follow-up, I was, you know, does acquire mean purchase the property? The answer was no, long-term
okay.
use agreement. And we've not really gotten into what that would be, whether it's 20 years, 30 years, et cetera.
Okay.
But I would presume if we're talking construction of tennis courts, the anticipation is it's not going to be a five-year agreement.
No.
We're going to be looking at least a decade or beyond. So that we're talking a long-term agreement.
I don't have any problem with it at all. The only question I have is kind of weird is, has anybody run this by Alan? Is there anything facility-wise that
yeah.
we need to worry about in
Does
that
he
court?
Need that?
The one thing that we can say, and I need to, again, if the direction was to move forward with working something out with the school system, you know, that was a former substation, which means there were transformers. And they are old enough that they probably contained PCBs.
Yeah.
We have no idea what the environmental conditions on that site may be. The good news is that if they do anything with the site, it's going to be paved over with tennis court material. There won't be access to the dirt underneath, etc. A lot of times that's a bigger issue if you're talking about using it for residential purposes or for something like a playground where you may have people that are...
But there's no transfer switches or anything
weird
like that, right?
There's nothing in there. If you go up to the fence and look through the slats, you'll see it's basically just a vacant penned yard at this point.
I don't know how far we went in terms of the environmental issues, but we did consider this location for the skate park back before we moved it to South Beach Park. So I know that those were the top two locations.
Okay.
So it was kind of all clear at that point. But again, I don't know how much, you know, there were soil samples or anything like that.
Yeah. So the one thing that, you know, again, if council wants to move forward in this direction, the one thing that we would want to throw out there as a consideration is that we may have a reciprocal need with the school system. As you're aware, Senate Bill 64, we're required to eliminate our surface water discharge coming out of the pollution control plant. And one of the areas that Dennis has circled on his map down at Public Works is all of the green space out at Fletcher High School. So maybe there's an opportunity to allow them to use this property in exchange for us giving them reclaimed water to use for irrigation on the property. That would definitely go a long way in helping to knock our number down that we need to figure out how to get rid of.
Considering there's nothing there now as far as irrigation is concerned.
Correct.
I'd think it's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Yeah.
There's no irrigation out there right now?
No.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there is.
Out there in the field?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, there is.
Is it city water?
Because there is.
There's irrigation. Trust me, it wouldn't look like it does if there was.
Because I called somebody when it was shooting across Seagate. I called Kevin Brown and I said, Kevin, who do I call? Because this sprinkler head is shooting water across Seagate. That's doing no good for this grass.
Is it back there behind? I didn't think it was back behind San Pablo, though.
No, it's or well water.
I don't know.
Okay, so that may be, if it's city water,
they would
want that reclaimed water for sure.
Yeah.
So do we have any concern on a longer term use agreement of liability for the city at all? I mean, obviously we would try to, in language.
Yeah, we haven't really gotten into the details yet. Right now we're at the policy level of whether it's something that the city wants to entertain. And if so, obviously we would look at it from the perspective of, you know, where do we go with the phase one environmental site assessment? What happens if there are materials that are found? Does the school board have the ability to say we're not interested, or would they take on the burden of doing whatever is necessary to put a tennis court on top of it? We haven't gotten into any of those conversations yet. We're still at the high level. Does the city want to consider entertaining this?
Have we had any conversations regarding the possibility of the tennis courts going east by the Boys and Girls Club and whatever is used on field at that end is effectively replaced by field where this is on the corner, and therefore it wouldn't be paved over and might make the mitigation of whatever's under that soil a little more important? I don't know.
And
the only reason I bring that up is Joe and I had a conversation about that, and I wasn't so sure that the residents right there across 10th Street would be too crazy about tennis courts, lit or not lit, but especially if they were lit, being right there versus if they're all the way down at the other end of that field to the far east up against the Boys and Girls Club. I don't think anybody cares too much there. But
may end up with two different issues of liability based on what goes in. You're absolutely right. If it's kept as a green space and added as green space versus added as a tennis court, there might be different issues that are associated with that.
Can I ask Principal Levert, have you guys considered that location?
So not that location. If you immediately off the wall of the Boys and Girls Club is actually not our property, it's actually the Boys and Girls Club property. It doesn't go very far, you're right, you still get the courts over there. We haven't thought of that, but as you guys may know, Fletcher is under construction. Only if you're talking about the west side of Fletcher High School, those portables that you see kind of in that L formation, they're going away. They're going to put a thing on, there's going to be cement parking coming, that's where the tennis courts are moving. So right now, because obviously with those tennis courts going, I have to have a plan, you know, and obviously my plan did not include using the city of Jacksonville Beach's property, of course. So I have to be prepared for not being able to use that property. Right now, they're kind of, you know, where the middle school baseball field is located, so left field, they're kind of slid off, you know, a little bit behind that, off, so it'll be a little off the road, much more than the property is that you guys own. There, so that's where we would start. We're just taking up, you know, it's going to take up a little more of the green space in San Pablo, putting it there. So we thought if we had out, you know, allowed that. So that would be, even if they'd already started putting them there by the time we got the Jacksonville Beach property, we were able to acquire that, it might be green space. And then, like I said, some of the issues that y'all said might bubble up regarding what's underneath there would be okay for a tennis court, but maybe not. Because I doubt the tennis court, because y'all's property was all right there, 10 feet from Seagate Avenue and 10 feet from Fifth. I don't know, obviously this tennis court probably wouldn't go that tight to that property even if we were able to utilize that space.
Well, my thoughts about the corner there as far as lights is concerned is that it's not, you wouldn't see tennis practice at 10 o'clock at night anyways, but with students.
Yeah. Are they lighted right now?
I'm thinking
no,
I
don't
believe we're
lying.
And now the public, I will say the public does use our courts.
Yeah.
I think everybody has one of the gate keys that lives in.
I think if you're living on 10th Street near the school, you're subject to a lot between the band, the football game, the
kids parking right there.
I think a lot of the neighbors like to hear the band.
But I mean, my point being is that there's something that comes with living next to a school.
Right. So.
Any mitigation, I presume we would want that to be on DCPS. For the field and, you know,
Yeah.
That has to occur. I don't have anything to do with it.
We're comfortable with it just staying vacant, but if they want to use it, we would request that they take on whatever needs to be done to get it to usable shape.
Sounds like
and again, I'm not supposed to speak. When I go back to the construction crew at DCPS, if y'all said yes, you can acquire the property, you can utilize it, they may tell me, no, we can't use that.
Just looking to see what your options
really
are.
Appreciate your kindness. Still yours. But like I said, I think even if we did acquire it and the tennis courts weren't right there on it, I think it could still be used for all the soccers and the lacrosses and the baseball. Everything else we do up there.
And there's one back
there. I don't think that field ever stops.
Yeah, right.
And is it just, it would still be four courts, or are you looking at doing more courts, or do you know?
I want to say it's at least going to be that, but maybe possibly six. So we're going to try to put in an extra.
So you're not on that spot.
That'll take up a lot more space then.
But again, the field's large. I don't want to sit here and put out a goal. I'm not coming here saying San Pablo Field will no longer be able to be used for soccer. No matter if we're putting the tennis courts and not the
empty ones,
it'll still be available. Yes. It just gives us a little more, just a little greedy. That's it.
I'm not sure I've heard anyone say they don't think it's worth exploring.
I like it. That's good.
Well, I think it's worth exploring.
Can I just ask Principal Lefford a quick question?
Yes, ma'am.
Unrelated to the tennis courts? Just since you're here, I think a lot of us have been approached about the state of the pool. Can you give us an idea on, oh, you're surprised. Okay, good. I'm glad I brought it up. So it's COJ's pool. What's the ownership and who manages it?
The City of Jacksonville.
City of Jacksonville owns it, manages it.
Yes, ma'am.
And the school board has nothing to do with it, really.
No.
Okay. So.
I mean, we utilize ours more than probably the average person that's
right
in our pool. And then, what is that?
BAC.
Okay.
Is that Duval County Public Schools property or is it City of Jacksonville's property?
Where it sits is DCPS. I guess it's a mutual agreement type thing, you know, because it's open on the weekends, as y'all know, to the public during the majority of the summer, during weekends. But when we do utilize it, you know, all through swim season just finished, and then we'll keep swimming. It never goes unused.
Mm-hmm.
No. That's kind of like the San Pablo Field. I mean, it doesn't. Is there an issue?
Well, like I know they just did a big fundraiser for a heater.
Mm-hmm.
Heater. And I've heard just feedback from parents and people want to make it more of a premier pool.
Gotcha.
For swim meets and things like that. And so, I mean, obviously the whole area around it is a little, kind of looks like a construction site, which it sounds like it
no,
is.
No, it is right now and it's not being touched. I did beg not to touch.
Okay. So as far as you're concerned, it's all good. Complaints or maintenance issues need to go to Jacksonville.
Like I said, if they're trying to do the heater, maybe it's something the Parks and Rec Department of the City of Jacksonville maybe said no. And so we're trying to say yes.
But it's
we'll
BAC.
Just go ahead and do it. And you know, sometimes we'll just do things.
Yeah. But it's like there's some BAC's involved in some of the swim teams, not the Fletcher swim team, but BAC operates teams there.
And probably, obviously, like you guys were, the gentleman was up here going to the clubs and stuff.
Yeah.
Probably a lot more money involved with BAC.
Okay.
It is for Fletcher swim.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's a different.
Thank you.
Yes. You know, we don't charge for that. So no, they could be doing it, and you know, I'd be all for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Upgrade pool, we wouldn't have any problems with that whatsoever. But when it comes out to the City of Jacksonville comes out and does the maintenance and stuff like that, when you see them, it's the City of Jacksonville.
Okay. Very helpful. Thank you.
I think I got the direction I was looking for on this item. Jumping over to back up to A, future briefing topics. Take one down and pass it around.
Kudos, by the way. I did not think you were going to get all these topics done in time. I told him.
We tried hard. So in December, we have comp plan overview. That's tentatively scheduled by planning and development, assuming they get it back with enough time to review it and then put it in front of you. We'll have the end of year report on the parking program. which wrapped up a month or so ago. We'll also have the RFP of ticketed event draft for you to take a look at as well. And we'll have some input that we'll be seeking on Project Opioid, where Councilmember Horn and I have been on a couple phone calls now talking about that topic. In January, we have, I'm going to work backward to forward, we have the city property for construction use. This is going to be discussing what our current policy is for allowing contractors to use publicly owned area as construction laydown. We've been doing the end zones, we've got some other areas that we do for city projects, but we've been using them for private as well. It started well before I got here. We want to get some policy direction on that. Citywide gateway signage, that's going to be Molly's project that she'll be kicking off and giving you a walkthrough of what that project's going to be. My evaluation is currently set to be discussed on January 8th in advance of my anniversary on the 29th, I believe. I may get with the mayor to try and move that because January 8th, I need to be out of town. I have a family member that's having a procedure that I need to be there for. And then in February, right now, the only item we have on there is ballot initiatives. For next November's election, we have a time frame of, I think it's about 6 months in advance of the election, to get items to the supervisor of elections. So if there are ballot initiatives that the council wants to put forward, February is the time to start talking about them. There might be two that council feels they want to put forward for consideration by the public. We'll see how that goes.
Mr. Mayor.
I can't go through that again.
are there any topics that council wants to add in addition to what you're seeing here already? If there's any you think of, shoot me an email and we'll see where we can fit it in.
Thank you for providing this. Very
helpful. No problem. Always trying to stay about 60 to 90 days out. And are there any committee assignment reports that any council members want to give at this point?
The trip to the Fast Fly-In in D.C. I think I spoke to most people about it, but it was the juice was worth the squeeze. I got to sit down with Congressman Rutherford and Congressman Bean. Other. And it sounds like Congressman Rutherford's office is highly in favor of helping out Beaches Hospital and the 13th Avenue South project. He says they love ground-up projects. Sounds like something that would be right in their wheelhouse. Send it to Katie and Kevin, and let's get it rolling. That's what his words were. So it sounds positive.
They've got all of our information at this point. They're in the process of looking at it.
Okay, good. Yeah, and then all the other issues that we talked about, it seems like our congressmen are all in favor of the National Flood Insurance Program. They're supportive of it. They're supportive of the increasing or not necessarily increasing, but supplementing or putting in place the National Disaster Relief Funds or the Relief Funds, whatever it's called. We talked about that, and then
the ARPA? Are you talking about the ARPA funds or what?
No, not ARPA. What's disaster relief?
Oh.
There's apparently a shortage in
FEMA funds.
Yeah, and there's a shortage in disaster relief funds, and they want to look at resupplying those funds, I guess. So. And then tomorrow I fly out for National League of Cities Atlanta City Summit.
You're flying?
You're the man driving?
Fly.
Okay. I'm going to be interested to hear what you
yeah,
find
I think
from
that. I think I already.
The Airbnb thing.
From what I've read, I think I know which direction you're going to be going, but I am too.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like a sell on their behalf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did we send everyone the state appropriation request?
Old council?
Uh huh. Or do no. Does everybody know what it? We should probably make sure they have that.
Yeah. What was that?
It was mentioned, I think, by the senator and the representative at the Beaches Watch meeting.
Okay.
But, yeah, but I don't think. Yeah, if you could send it, that would be good. Yeah, Neptune Beach has a huge appropriation request. Huge compared to ours.
They need it.
When is their meeting on Pittman Road?
The 20th. That's their workshop.
Well, I've got nothing else for council, so thank you all for coming this evening. And we got it all done by 7:42, 7:37.